Nationalist with Dr. Matthew Raphael Joseph.
Hi everyone, welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. I'm sorry, I've missed two of the last 3 weeks. I've been in the hospital with kidney stones that were so painful that I was hallucinating. The operation dealing with that is gruesome to describe. I've been hit with a very large IRS bill, which I can't quite figure out. Apparently, it's a miscalculation of my earned income tax credit. And I just dropped $400 on a new set of brakes. So I'm worse off than I've ever been in that way. The academic world, you know, pretty much knows who I am. And no matter how popular I've been with students in the past, no matter how much better I am than the average professor out there, jobs are out of the question. Proving that it has nothing to do with students or education. It has to do with ideology, campus after campus after campus. So yet again, I ask for the help of my supporters in any way possible. But the medical issue has really knocked me out. I had no idea how painful kidney stones were. And it stresses the significance of fasting to cut out everything but water from your diet. Coffee, because, you know, we're human beings, but is essential to clean out your system. I was in so much pain that when I finally woke, I passed out from it. And I woke up in the CAT scan, and the doctor said, "Well, you know what childbirth feels like now," and I would have agreed with him, except that I couldn't speak. So this has been it's been a disaster, but you know, this is something that we know is going to happen when we sign up. We know that this has everything to do with the lifestyles that we lead in America. It has everything to do with the regime. It has everything to do with what's going to happen to people who live the life of the prophets. By request, I want to spend some time on something I've been trying to avoid, really, the stupid Holy and Great Council last year at the Fanar. This is an Orthodox issue. There's something new in the Orthodox world called a Pan-Orthodox Council. This is a brand new concept. It's kind of like the stupid phrase Orthodox Christian, which doesn't, you know, it's Orthodox Catholic, Greek Catholic versus Roman Catholic. For some reason, the Union's got that phrase. And so Orthodox Christian is simply, it's a neologism, as well as a misnomer. But this was something we all knew was coming, that the Fanar was attempting to take over the church, to condemn the true Orthodox, and to have all power brought to himself. What I didn't know, well, I knew in outline, but didn't know in detail, was the extent to which the Fanar is controlled by the United States. The U.S., I'm telling you, no matter where I go, no matter what rock I lift, underneath it, the U.S. is obsessed with destroying Russia. This is all they care about. There's a massive military buildup in the Baltics, in Scandinavia, Poland, and now Romania. Hundreds of thousands of American troops facing Russia, and there's no reason given. There's been no aggression, there's been no attacks, there's been absolutely nothing. There's no evidence of any designs on any country. Although, by definition, the U.S. building up its armies in these countries is a form of aggression and occupation. So far, there's no reason. No one has any idea why this is happening. The United States cannot win a war with Russia for a whole bunch of reasons. Number one, the American military is not prepared to deal with soldiers who fight back. They're cowards. They could beat up ragtag militias in the desert, maybe, and even there they struggle. But dealing with motivated, trained regulars, they're going to cut and run. Because that's what the American military is. They're mercenaries to the New World Order. They're pigs. And I really, truly, truly call on any Orthodox soldier to desert his post as soon as possible, because you're serving this Luciferian New World Order that, at least temporarily, is using the United States as its goal. There's no political will in America. There's no money in America. The corruption at the Pentagon is so severe and overwhelming that the most of the military budget it disappears. Just before 9/11, there was something like $7 trillion missing from the Pentagon. That was immediately forgotten because of the events of the following day. The news story came out the day before. Russia is the center of the world. It has always been. It's the one that smashed the Khazar Empire in the 10th century and is in the process of doing so again. The United States is the new Khazar Empire. And very much like the Khazars, they rely on mercenaries. Regular soldiers are mercenaries in the way that they're, and that's why they're paid so very, very well. Mid-level officers in the U.S. Air Force are well over six figures now, with no cost, health insurance, dental, retirement, no income caps there. Everything is free, housing, all this stuff. They have allowances for everything. Ultimately, it comes down really essentially they're making about $200,000 a year, with almost zero chance of any casualties. And these are the people who the morons will cheer on and call heroes. Well, it'll be a different story against the Russian or the Chinese Air Force, because as I address the American military, some actually know how to shoot back. And the Americans are so stupid and cowardly, and they hate themselves as well as they hate you. They're going to immediately turn on you the minute the body bags start pouring in. And you're going to die for a cause that you don't even know. No one seems to know. I can't find a clear reason for this massive military buildup. China has already said, and they're obligated to the treaty of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization to fight for Russia if necessary. But, you know, I was on Rick Adams' show the other day, and he said, you know, the point isn't to win the war. The point is to lose the war. The U.S. is just, you know, there's not talking about American capital here. We're not talking about Americans. You're just, these soldiers are just golems. You're nothing. The point is to lose the war. But at least weaken Russia and China to the extent that a new order can arise in its place. You know, there's nothing special about the U.S. In world history, except just for the moment, although it's rapidly disappearing, it has a hegemony over economic decisions. But we all know the real reason. The reason that Russia is the enemy it really is twofold. Number one, it refuses to privatize its oil concerns and natural gas concerns. Privatization, just another word for giving it over to American and English capital, the international oil firms. And number two, they're seeking, along with the Chinese, of building a dollarless market for these commodities. If that occurs, of course, the American economy, which really has very little productive industrial production, it's all just debt based on debt, on more debt, with the promise of debt in the future, and that's an economy today, would collapse immediately. But the point is, there's nothing, you know, Americans, you know, it could be nuked tomorrow. As far as the New World Order is concerned, it doesn't matter. They always find someone else to do their bidding for them. Putin has, as I predicted in 2000, has said that he's not going to do their bidding. Donald Trump is like Putin in one respect, and that is, he didn't owe anybody anything. Donald Trump didn't take campaign contributions of any size. He was self-financing, and that's why they hate him, and that's why he's free. Putin's foundation is in the security service, and because of that, he's free to fight oligarchy. In America, politicians are window dressing. They're usually very ignorant. Many of you who've confronted politicians, they don't really know anything. And Nixon was the last president who had any real functional knowledge of foreign affairs. Rather, it's highly privatized. Foreign policy is made by the oil firms, is made by financial capital, and the think tanks that are, you know, these are all privatized. And so many of the functions of the federal government are privatized anyway. As I've said many times, there needs to be a new political language developed. There isn't one right now to deal with the fact that there is no public or private sector anymore. There is this weird hybrid of public-private, which the New World Order is based on. The New World Order is this network of power. Some of it is state, some of it is private. The deep state is a misnomer, as I've said many times. I've coined the term regime with the capital R to refer to the private entities, the academic entities, the journalistic entities, as well as that those who actually take a government paycheck. And since many government functions are privatized, the concept of deep state is just a misnomer and shouldn't be used. The only power in America is corporate power. It's private. And they are far more powerful than any government. And I think that was decided in the 90s, the showdown between Microsoft and the Justice Department, where the Justice Department surrendered. Microsoft could outspend them and basically put them in their place. It always made me laugh when I heard of Bernie Sanders talking about regulating Wall Street. You know, he knows he's lying. He knows this is just shtick for him, because Wall Street regulates the state, not the other way around. The private capital creates the state, uses the state, dominates it. One of the reasons the libertarians are so idiotic is that they really believe that government and business are opposed. They're so stupid. They can't see that the politicians and bureaucrats are utterly dependent on corporate cash to function. It's a business expense. Not only are they not opposed, it's an aspect of the corporate world. The state is just one, their security service that they outsource for their own needs, is what it comes down to. Now, it's different for small businesses, of course. Small businesses, a few that are left, are under attack everywhere. Entrepreneurship is a thing of the past in America, and private property is a thing of the past. Remember, property doesn't refer to your toothbrush. It refers to productive capital. The abolition of private property means that the private control over banking or the private control over industrial production. That's been deliberately obscured in the West. Anyway, what does this all have to do with the Holy and Great Council? Nothing holy and there's nothing great about it. It's just pompous. Now, Russia, as always, the center of everything. Orthodox Church, as always, which has a very quiet reputation in America, is at the center of everything. The Fanar refers to the district of Constantinople, Istanbul, and Turkey, where the Judeo-Greek oligarchy functioned during the rule of the Turkish Empire, and is also the seat of the Patriarch of Constantinople, the so-called Ecumenical Patriarch. Let me make one thing very clear. Bishops don't rule the church. That's based on the heresy of created grace, that somehow the hierarchy is this initiate, this cult of initiates that alone has access to grace and then dispenses it to who they will. That's a heresy. Again, people are so stupid, they can't see that they've made bishops just little popes. So they accept the filioque, whether they realize it or not. The point being that bishops are just one function of many. They don't. Their function, really, at most, is to oversee the administration of priests in the parishes, and to synthesize the cooperation between monasteries and parishes. At most, that's what he does. The old believers, the bishop has very little power. He is a production of the monastery. He's produced by the monastery. He's not independent. He certainly doesn't do anything by himself. There is a diocesan council, which everyone forgets about. And the bishop refers to himself always in the plural. He's referring to the diocesan council. He is a spokesman for the diocesan council, and nothing more than that. This is an office, not a person. When Gregory the Great speaks about the ruler, you know, or the bishop in his pastoral care, he's actually referring to this conciliar institution. What's happening in this council, very much in the fake church of the Soviet Union, is bishops are claiming to be the church. And their job is to tell you what to do, to defend the faith, which of course they never do. They defend their faith, but, and they dispense grace. And anyone who doesn't listen to them is outside of the church. One of the documents of this stupid council says it's referring to the true Orthodox, and it's extremely poorly written, at least in the English translation. It says that the those who seek to create divisions in the church should be condemned. Now, the only people they're referring to is the true Orthodox. And they say, on the pretext of, you know, this purity of the faith. So that's now a pretext among these idiots. So the purity of the faith cannot be a motive for splitting with the hierarchy. The hierarchy now has been declared infallible by this idiotic, holy and great Fanar U.S. State Department creation. And it's declared infallible because they're saying that the church is a church because it's them. It begs the question, if they fall into heresy, they're not the church anymore. Well, the way that that's worded, among the documents, it says, you know, these people are creating divisions in the church on the pretext of purifying Orthodoxy. And therefore, they should be condemned. Well, that implies that they're the church to begin with. That's a declaration of infallibility, that their personal rule is sufficient to guarantee doctrinal purity. In fact, they are doctrinal purity. So that is the heresy of created grace. That is the filioque. That is papism, just, you know, in a slightly more decentralized way. It is heresy, and there can be no sanctifying grace there. We need to be strict about this. Now, canon law is, these are guidelines under normal circumstances, usually dealing with, you know, large parishes in cities. Most of the canons, the disciplinary canons, are ignored. I've been through this before. Most of the pedalian is completely ignored. And and there's good reason for that. If you read the canons of Saint John the Faster, there would be no priests if those were strictly enforced. So this is not a code of law in the positivist modern sense. These are guidelines. This is the apostolic standard. At most, canons are abbreviations of a very, very complex, very deep tradition. The concept of law today has no bearing on when the pedalian was written. A law is something that's built into the function of the universe that we slowly adapt ourselves to. It's not something that's passed by a power above us, an alien power above us, that we have to follow or we get into trouble. Those are two completely different concepts of law. And so you refer to the canon of law today doesn't mean the same thing that it meant 1,000 years ago. And I'm finding this the case for many words. People are reading the Bible and they're reading numbers as if they're just digits, not realizing that, of course, in the ancient world, numbers were icons. Even a concept like symbol has no bearing at all. The word symbol is not the opposite of substance. It's the gateway to substance. The canons are symbols, just like the creed is a symbol. It is an abbreviation, a very, very brief abbreviation of an ancient tradition that's been spelled out because there's a specific crisis. And now, as far as the disciplinary canons are concerned, there is absolutely nothing infallible about them. because largely, you know, bishops are not only not infallible, they're usually the cause of all of our problems. Bishops used to be elected by the faithful, by the monastics, by the clergy, and was responsible to them, and ruled, so to speak, within the diocesan council of which he became the spokesman. So the bishop as an individual really didn't have any power at all. This wasn't about power. It was an iconic example. He was the chief monastic of the diocese. Now, there have been extraneous things in the ancient world in urban administration that he became a part of, but that's not relevant to what a bishop is. Now, here's the key fact. We're not in normal times, and therefore canon law often doesn't apply. I don't mean the doctrinal stuff. I mean the disciplinary stuff. We don't have normal times. We don't even speak the same language as the ancients. Not even in translation, we don't. We're not dealing in normal times at all. This level of corruption is unknown in world history. Sodom and Gomorrah might be a very, very moderate, very, very, you know, brief period of it. Lot's wife being turned into a pillar of salt just proves that homosexuality was at the core of it, because salt is known for destroying all forms of fertility. Salt can be a symbol for usury as well as homosexuality for that reason. It's not an accident that salt off with the word salary from the Latin salt for salt, because at the time it was very valuable. So we're talking about, you know, the modern world. But without a Jewish global rule, and without a media, and without internet porn, and a million and one other temptations, this corruption, I would love to see John the Faster, if he was forced to live in America in 2017, what he would write then. We are so far from the standard, but that's not our fault. I can't help it that I was born in 1971. I was hardwired. I didn't convert until I was in my 20s. I've been hardwired into this rotten system, which is why I made a distinction in the past between the empirical self and the spiritual noumenal self, the two forms of the heart we Skovoroda and others talk about. So this pan-Orthodox, whoever that is, and keep in mind, you know, very few of the Orthodox churches bothered to go. But that doesn't matter, because the Fanar itself said that we are the church. So not only are the bishops the church in their mind, but the Fanar is. A long-standing attempt, you know, Bartholomew was educated in Rome. He is Catholic. Anyone who commemorates him is outside of the church. And especially American Orthodox, they're so stupid. They'll tell you that being canonical means commemorating the big church, because it's big. That is a declaration of infallibility. They don't even realize the implications of their words. Now, canonical is following the dogmatic canons. Canonical is that your noumenal self, your interior self, is properly organized. That can be perfect. That can be without any external necessity. Our phenomenal self is a wreck. Who, you? The saints themselves said they were the worst sinners. So were they lying? Well, they weren't lying, then we're okay. The phenomenal self is always going to be a wreck. That distinction has been destroyed. And of course, you notice that all these idiots will talk about the patristic inheritance, but of course will ignore all their economic doctrines, their hatred of capitalism, private property, market, Jews, usury. All that's out the window. So these are symbolic words and phrases, kind of a sort of virtue signaling with these people. They don't mean a word that they say. It's really weird. You know, there's like the few canons that are actually used in disciplinary forms, this seems to be arbitrary. You know, but we live in an era, and the reason I say that we're living in an era of extreme crisis that's never existed before, not even close to this before. And you have a media that is tightly Jewish and controlled by this elite who has access to psychological theories and insights, where they know how to appeal to people at their weakest point. Advertising and capital is based on that. And this is very closely connected with what we're talking about here. what this ridiculous council is number one, a declaration that the Patriarch of Constantinople, that hasn't been a Patriarch of anything in a very long time, is the Pope of the East. He is in communion with Rome. Dimitri of Constantinople was in communion with Rome. They've been in communion with Rome. Rome's been in the diptychs since 1972. You know, and most of the Patriarchs of Constantinople have been Masons. I don't believe Bartholomew is. If he is, I'd like to see proof of it. I haven't been able to find it. But others were. Now, the 19th degree, according to Albert Mackey, is the oath to Lucifer. So you know, I guess you could, these you think that's canonical, but that's the mentality you're up against here. So you're dealing with several, and that's the first thing. The second thing is that the bishops in communion with the Fanar are infallible, and that they are the definition of doctrinal perfection. They are the church because they're the church. It's a purely positivist modern conception of law. Number three, they and they alone. And this is central because there's a document there called about declaring autocephaly or autonomy. And this has been an issue in the church before. It's one of the reasons that a lot of churches didn't show up to this thing. That says, of course, predictably, that only the Fanar can decide what a church is. That's not just a document about declaring autocephaly. It's a document about what's a church and what's not. Everything is determined by the Fanar oligarch. Remember, the Ecumenical Patriarchate is a member and a supporter of the World Council of Churches, as is the Church in Moscow. This is why there can be no communion with them. Keep in mind that when bishops have fallen from grace, because we're not heretics or papists, that has nothing to do with the grace of the sacraments. That has nothing to do with good priests. Good priests are automatically given jurisdiction. Roman Catholics call this supply jurisdiction. I call it common sense. God is not looking for any excuse to send people to hell, which is apparently the theology here, that a bishop has so much power that he is grace and can dispense it to others, that if he falls, then there is no sacraments in the whole diocese. It's a ridiculous, completely heretical concept that comes directly from papalolatry. It is condemned, the whole Hesychast doctrine condemns that idea. I've written this in the past, which no one has bothered to read. But the Hesychast doctrine is that everyone shares. You know, bishops are just one, you know, usually the worst of all of us, but with just one function of different specialties within the church. But the point is, good priests are automatically given jurisdiction because God doesn't want to send people to hell. God can never be a part of anything that's stupid or unjust. He will always protect his people. It doesn't matter what jurisdiction you're a part of. Both the true Orthodox Church exists for totally non-dogmatic reasons. These schisms upon schisms upon schisms were always personal and financial. They'll invent a reason to leave. Again, you know, they're going to have to pay for that. Most of these bishops are never going to see God. Or if they do, it's going to be very unpleasant. They really are disgusting. And there's so many of them now that the quality is zero. That has nothing to do with grace. That has nothing to do with the sacraments. Nothing to do with, it's almost like these idiots say that God's love is gone because a bishop is a moron and serves the World Council of Churches rather than the gospel. One has nothing to do with the other. Common sense says, as also Gregory the Great and many others say, that this was the case in the Arian crisis as well. There were very few bishops left. This was the case in the Soviet Union with very few bishops, and that you couldn't even be communicated with at the time. Priests were automatically given, even heads of families, like under the Serbian Slavas based on this, had sacramental grace, not in a formal sense. But what is a sacrament? It's nothing more than, it's not a delivery of grace. That's also heretical. A sacrament is simply the outer coating of the uncreated grace that's always there. There is one And remember what grace is. This is God's presence. To believe in created grace is to believe that God doesn't exist, that he is a creation of bishops that use that for their own power. The presence of God on earth was singular, and it doesn't change. We could head towards it or away from it. It is a restoration of everything, restoration of all creation. Most of us can't see it. Most of us can't even approach it. And this is the greatest evil here. And it has to do with modern positivism and nominalism, the idea that to rule something is to have this alien impository power over you. That's not what a law is. That's not what rule is. That's not what Gregory the Great meant by the word that translated normally as ruler in his pastoral care. That's not what a concept of a bishop is. Authority is very different from power. An icon can have authority. I'm an authority on Russian politics. It doesn't mean I have any power over it. Those are two very different things. The same thing goes for monarchs. They didn't pass laws. That's laughable. That's a modern conception. Law is something already built into the human heart, built into the human community. It has basic, fundamental, natural guidelines, but that's it. But that's what the canons really are. Otherwise, there's quite a bit of diversity in local practice. But when a bishop falls away, I shrug my shoulders. Well, that's his problem. There's still many, many good priests who God will not abandon because the bishop is, and because the true Orthodox Church has absolutely not given a viable alternative to world orthodoxy, then God, unless he just is dying to send people to hell, God has, is certainly going to recognize this. He has to because he's just. I'm not going to believe that he just can't wait to send people to hell, which is what most people think. Who cares if the bishop falls away? Most people have nowhere to go. Most people don't know where to go. God's going to take care of you if you maintain faith. And we're in an era of crisis. Now, this wouldn't be the case, 1,000 years ago, but it is the case now. Even without clergy at all, you're better off than going to the Antiochian church. Now, one of the reasons I say this, the number of heresies here is endless. Chiliasm is something also, because these people, one of the things that the documents of the Great Council says concerning ecumenism is that we need to start rehashing and reconsidering these issues in a new way that divide the churches. Now, the implication there is that they know better than the ancients did, that the ancients were too ignorant to understand the real issues involved. Some of these bishops are so dumb, they think that the distinctions between the Monophysites and the Orthodox are based on language. And yet at the time, in the 5th century, they all spoke Greek. But that hasn't, they haven't gotten around to reading that yet. This is the stupidity that goes into this stuff. The assumption of the ecumenical movement is chiliastic because it says we know better than the ancients. They were ignorant. They believed in the patriarchal family and in only two genders, and so we don't have to listen to them anymore. And the modern banking system is not usury in the ancient world, because that just meant excessive interest. Stupid crap like this that they invent to justify their world, to prevent severe cognitive dissonance from setting in with all of its nasty after effects. The point in general here is that decent priests and decent people, especially heads of families, remember, the Serbian Slava is the extended family. The head of that family has a priestly function. That's the point of it. The head of the family has always had a priestly function. The home is a monastery. The home is a church. Every church father said that. Don't allow bishops to say, clergy is just who we say. Most of the people who they ordain, myself included, are ridiculous. The fact that anyone made me a priest at all just shows you how dumb my former bishop was. Oh, speaking of which, some of you may not realize this. I'm still a priest, a very bad one. Sometimes I forget I am, but I'm a very bad priest under the Russian Orthodox Church Metropolitan Damascene of Moscow. Now, I got offers all the time when I was with the Autonomous Metropolitan. And that's, you know, there's almost nothing left of there. There are 7 bishops and about 15 people. I love Metropolitan John. I always will. I decided to go under Damascene of Moscow. Now, Damascene comes from the Synod of Metropolitan Vitali, the former head of the ROCOR, who refused to join the Moscow Patriarchate. And he ran the church from Canada. And so Vitali, Anthony, and Damascene is how that goes. And there's not much in America of the Church of Damascene. It's really just a handful of us. And I guess I'm pretty much it right now. So that's all been taken care of. They don't recognize this stupid trial or anything like that. They laugh at that. And they know what motivates it. And since they're mostly in Russian or in Russia, they're not subject to the same pressure as they would if they were in America. I don't want an American-based church to come under the same heat that they would by having me as a member, because that's you know they're scared. They'll condemn Patriarch Sergius because he served the Soviet state rather than suffer a slow, agonizing death in the Gulag, and would have guaranteed the deaths of many thousands of priests, according to the KGB. They condemn him for that, but they immediately turn traitor due to the threat of a possible hypothetical slight inconvenience. They don't want to be called names on the internet, so they'll turn their backs on the faith. The condemnations of Sergius are really ridiculous, because I love to see these people facing the NKVD or the Cheka in the early part of the revolution and what they would do. They wouldn't stay firm. They turn their backs on people all the time for the stupidest of reasons. They're not going to go to the Gulag for anybody. And these people cut and run at the slightest hint that there's going to be inconvenience or a lack of social respectability, even though they have none. It's nonsensical. And they're cowards and they're fakes, but we're living in a time where the chaff is being cast aside. Most of these, you know, Orthodox parishes are, you know, at least clerically speaking, have nothing there. That doesn't mean that they're individuals who aren't well taken care of. Gregory the Great says, God the Father takes care of all the people who have been abandoned by their bishop. Remember the example of the Rechabites. This is in the Old Testament, in the book Jeremiah. These are, these were what we would call schismatics today. The Rechabites wanted to go back to the original foundation of Old Testament Israel. Highly decentralized, anarchists. They were Cossacks in many ways, just generally nonviolent. St. John Chrysostom praised them. Prophet Jeremiah praised them. And they were in rebellion against the new state of Solomon, who died a heretic. He's not a saint. Why am I seeing him in halos? He died a heretic. He can't be a saint. Either that or heresy means nothing. The man brought in pagan gods, that is the abomination of desolation. He is the symbol of the modern world. He is a symbol of the nominalist entity. He's a symbol of the Fanar Church. He isn't a saint. Not only that, but he used slave labor. He caused the split of Israel into two factions. He caused the death of God knows how many thousands and destroyed Israel as a political entity almost entirely. How is that man a saint? It's ridiculous. Historical illiteracy. Oh, speaking of historical illiteracy, I was reading the Moscow Patriarchate. It shows you how stupid they are. They have in their some of their the anathemas. Right-believing hierarchs. Right-believing sovereign emperors. Peter I, Catherine I, Lord Byron's regents, and Catherine II. Right-believing emperors and empresses. Catherine the Great destroyed. I mean, but by the time Peter the Great died, the Orthodox Church was less than half its size. No historian denies that Peter was a Freemason, and he's right believing according to these morons. And I have it right in the Synodicon. Catherine the First. She was nothing more. She was a slave girl that Peter raped. She wasn't Orthodox. She didn't speak Russian. She didn't know anything. She died of in an alcoholic coma shortly after Peter's death. She had nothing to do with anything. Peter had rejected Orthodoxy. The two Annas had rejected Orthodoxy. Catherine I wasn't anything. Catherine II may have formally accepted it, but she hated Orthodoxy. She absolutely hated it. She destroyed the Cossack Sikh. How are these right-believing princes? Yeah, right, equal to Vladimir and Olga, according to these morons. Right in this liturgy, they're idiots. And as they're writing this, they know what happened there. They know that Peter tortured to death every major bishop at the time. Anyone who opposed Prokopovich was broken on the wheel, sometimes in his presence. But he's right believing. Scumbags. But these are also the same people who said that Stalin was the great benefactor of the church. So Patrick Pimmon said that in 1953 at Stalin's death. So you see why you can't go to them. You see why you can't trust them. You know, sometimes politically, they say great things. They do good work. You know, they have many good priests. They have many good monks. They have many good institutions. That has nothing to do. They certainly have grace in that respect, but the bishops don't. One has nothing to do with the other. That would be created grace and a heresy, as I'll say again. And this is a big problem here. But this is the Soviet church, and they have that same mentality. And one of the aspects of Sergianism as a heresy is the notion that it's only the institution that matters. The church is the institution, which is heretical for all the reasons I've said before. So there's this hubris, there's this arrogance. Bishops cause more trouble than they're worth, generally speaking. They invent any reason to go into schism, and now, because they've been multiplied with all these factions, they usually aren't very good at what they do. Every once in a while, you find a good one, a John Maximovitz, that type, but they usually have nothing to do with administration. That's, you know, because that would interfere with their monastic calling. A bishop is monastic, proving, yet again, that a bishop doesn't rule anything. He's an icon. Everything is autonomous, but of course we live in a society that is dying. We live in a society that is openly satanic. So to think that the canons apply the same way it would 1,000 years ago is ridiculous. You know, we're alcoholics being forced to work in a bar, and being told every day that there's no such thing as alcoholism, and we go to hell if we take a drink? That's ridiculous. That's exactly what we are, and that's understating the problem. You have to be very, very careful, and this is a pastoral situation here, is very delicate. The issue is the apostolic standard has to remain very, very high. We're extremely far from it, but that has nothing to do with the standard itself. God will take care of the rest of it. If our noumenal self is together and we're struggling, that's more than enough. And that's, you know, that's a miracle in and of itself. That there are any Christians left at all in 2017 is a miracle. Constantly being bombarded with hatred. Soviet propaganda was very, very crude. Now it's being written by psychologists. That's the whole purpose of psychology. Is to study human behavior, to see what motivates people and what doesn't. It's now very, very subtle. And now the language has been hijacked. Words are being redefined. It's getting to the point where people will be trapped inside the words as they're defined by the regime, which is essentially institutionalized psychosis. You know, reality is just a projection of the powerful. This is where we are right now. So don't talk to me about, you know, the old technical discussions about the canons. Shut up. No, we're in extreme crisis. The fact that we could function for 5 seconds is only through God's grace. What's happened to me, all the university jobs have been fired from, financial trouble, this is going to happen to all of us. You know, Father Seraphim Rose says that institutions will collapse. Institutions will serve Antichrist because they have a stake in the system. Institutions, and that's actually the next thing I wanted to mention, is the World Council of Churches. Who, of course, is at the center of this. The Caton, the journal that I published in many times, has done an excellent article on really what's behind this ridiculous council. Alexander Rondo and Alexander Alexander Koulousos, that these are the go-betweens, the U.S. government and private capital, and the Fanar. The Fanar makes very little money. The Fanar doesn't have many churches. But it is, Rondo is now the main State Department ambassador for the Horn of Africa. But it's not a coincidence, as Keitan informs us, that he was at the center of the revolution in Yugoslavia. He was with an advisor in Georgia when they declared war on Russia. He was an advisor in Ukraine for the 2004 Maidan riots. So the man does nothing but serve the New World Order. And Karoulos lives in allegedly a priest who lives in a $1 million house in the Hamptons right next to George Soros. The rubbing our noses in it here. This is where the money is coming from. These councils, of course, are very expensive. And the Fanar functions only because of the foundations that give money. Now, in the Fanar saying that we and we alone are the church, it takes away from Russian autonomy. Rondo, the State Department was involved in the plot against the former Prime Minister of Greece who wanted a rapprochement with Russia. He was implicated in that. And really, you know, Justine Fongoli, who wrote the biography of Archbishop Spyridon, comes right out and says that the evidence points to the fact that the Fanar, the Patriarch of Constantinople, is essentially an American creation. You know, it had been a British creation at one point, you know, in the early, you know, 100 years ago, now it's an American creation. And using that to defang the Russian faction in Greek politics is essential. And remember, it's those who hold the Greek debt are Western banks. So in order for them to get a good deal from them, they're going to have to do what they're told. And so they've now tilted toward Israel. Israel and Turkey are allies. So I'd like to see how that works out in the public mind, but that's the condition that we're in. The elites have created this alternative reality because they needed to tilt to the Americans or to the Western bankers because they hold Greek debt. And they're not going to get a restructuring. They're not going to get, even though this debt has been, you know, they've made a profit off of Greece many, many times. And remember the very promissory note that the Greek government offered is itself currency that's worth a fortune. So they've gotten their money 1,000 times over. They just want to continue to take every spare penny out of the Greeks. And they'll use any nationalist movement. Of course, they'll get the anarchists and the communists who serve capitalism as always, who serve the New World Order, to go and smash them. Anyone who says they're going to get out of the European Union, needs to be a truly orthodox state, et cetera, et cetera. They will then bring in the anarchists to fight for the capitalists, like they always do. And all of these groups. Now, one of the ways that you could discover how the money works here, it takes a while because foundations give other foundations. They launder money. If you look at the World Council of Churches, for example, it's often very hard to find where their money comes from. There are two institutions that give millions. The first is Bread for the World. And the second is UNICEF. Well, that's not enough. Well, who the hell's Bread for the World? I never heard of Bread for the World before. Well, I go to their financial statement 2015, and it's Lehman Brothers, typical NGO. Everybody is here. The American Jewish World Service, the U.S. Global Leadership Council, American Express, Wells Fargo, Merrill Lynch. All of these are donors to both organizations. They have given far more than anybody else, almost everyone else combined, to the World Council of Churches, which, by the way, has an annual budget of $16 billion. It's like a country. This is an immensely powerful institution. Now, you have the World Council of Churches controlled by Lehman Brothers and the big banks. This is why the Greek state supports the World WCC agenda, even though the population generally does not. This is the benefit. The reason why Kirill and the Belarusian church, they are members of this ridiculous organization, because it's an empire in and of itself, and it's their conduit to corporate capital. If they need to get bailed out, if they need a restructuring, this is one mechanism they can use. All NGOs, WCC included, operate a multi-million dollar budget, or billion in the case of the World Council. And they don't have a printing press in their basement. It comes from corporate capital. NGOs, civil society, is simply the rule of Western capital. Someone like Patriarch Kirill, who had his whole education in the West, the YMCA, he came really more from the WCC than from Russia. He worked with the World Council of Churches from, as long as he's been in church, serving Soviet interests there. So his connection with Russia is iffy. He was a Western European exarch for a while. He comes out of the West just like Bartholomew does. But following the money for these movements is difficult because they now launder money. They know that people are watching. So it's not just the Rockefeller Foundation who founded the World Council of Churches for the sake of creating one world religion, which they said explicitly. Back in 1948 when they were founded, it's easy enough to discover. But now with the web, which I think the regime really regrets ever giving to the public, we now can see where the money comes from. So for an anarchist group, that attacks nationalism in say Greece, we look at the money. The Tides Foundation gives to the Rockefeller Foundation. The Rockefeller Foundation gives to the MacArthur Foundation. MacArthur Foundation gives to the Anarchist Collective of Athens, and they then create an organization, Anarchist for Collective for a Better Greece, the Institute for Social Reform or something neutral like that, and that's where the money goes to for the rioters. These rioters in America or elsewhere, they are centrally controlled. Bail money is already available. They're rarely punished. They show up in buses. They're often given drugs. This is a centrally planned operation. It's very, very complicated. You can't have uprisings in major cities at the same time unless it's coordinated. But finding money is often difficult because foundations launder money. Regardless of that, it comes down to the fact that all of these are now the FANAR itself is an NGO serving corporate capital. I said this many years ago, that the Orthodox Church in America, which is a profoundly corrupt institution, was given a $250,000 grant back in 1999, and that was placed in a secret account that was never audited. That had a lot to do with the fact that the ADM was kicked out of Russia, and they couldn't penetrate the Cuban market. But it just so happens that Wayne Andreas also controls the National Council of Churches in America, and a board member, Andrew Young, who was on the ADM board, was president of the NCC for a while. So in America, the National Council of Churches is essentially the philanthropic wing of Archer Daniels Midland, which is a purely globalist liberal, corporate capital, like it or not, is extremely liberal. Now, one of the things about liberalism is that once it takes power, it then rules as an authoritarian state, which is why the corporate capital loved the Soviet Union so much. Well, they built it. But once the revolution occurs and the church is repressed, then they will create the Masonic lore is the chariot or the god Mars. The than of the violent force necessary to maintain it. So now liberalism goes out the window. It's like today in the American college campuses. Liberalism goes out the window because they control everything now. The minute they win, they rule violently and through authoritarian methods. These writers, they're defending the system. They're not creating anything new. Feminism, was protecting privilege, not demanding anything. Women have always had very easy lives by comparison to men. I have many examples of that. But my writings are not being read, partially because they're long, partially because they're difficult, and technical. But I'm getting emails asking questions that I've answered many, many times, and it's largely there. Now, what's the connection here? What's all this? What does it come down to? Number one, there's a war against Russia, which is the entire New World Order's obsession, as I've said. Right now, New World Order has one enemy, and that's Putin and Russia and Russian nationalism. Making the Thanar the Pope, because, as it's been said over and over again, it is now an NGO under State Department control. The funneling of the money for this council came from the U.S. State Department, came from Rondo and his groups. Most of the money for the Thanar comes from the U.S. anyway, the private or public. The WCC is another conduit for it. The existence of the State Department in Ukraine and elsewhere, having the Ecumenical Patriarch decide what a church is in the process, because he doesn't believe that there's heresy. Kirill nor Bartholomew believe in heresy at all, except for the true Orthodox Church. Kostas Katabanis was a man who, the Prime Minister of Greece, who wanted closer relationships with Russia. That State Department group that's running the council that was at least partially in charge of trying to kill him. And he was able to escape. Even though he's been charged with crimes, he's never punished for obvious reasons. So Rondo and the two Alexanders have been a part of that movement as well. I'm sorry, I forgot his name before, and I just remembered I didn't mention it. That was in 2011. And of course, Rondo and these guys were advisors to the Greek government under Papandreou. And the result of that plot was that Greece then dropped its interest in any Russian or Bulgarian oil projects that went to the Americans instead. Remember, China is offering, and Russia and China are an alliance, are offering alternative financing for indebted countries. And this is frightening the West. This is why China is colonizing the African financial market, because they're coming in offering better terms without demanding the exploitation of their resources and demanding liberal democracy and abortion and everything else as conditions for their social restructuring and their to get the money. So this council is evil. It is the synthesis of evil. It's a robber council is way too nice for. There's a big difference between a synod and a council, by the way. We don't have time for that. But this is a very complicated idea, and I've raced through a lot of things here. But it all comes down to making sure that the Orthodox Church is tightly controlled and used against Russia. Kirill's in the WCC because that's where he's from, but there's got to be a revolt against him there. Russia benefits nothing from being in an organization that hates them. Same thing for Belarus. They don't get money from it. They don't get support from it. Their people don't like it, and yet they refuse to leave. It's caused schism and division, and yet they refuse to leave. There's a reason for that. Kirill has to go. People like Rondo and Kalamanis, they were in, Rondo worked for the World Bank. He was part of the European CFR. These all connected institutions seeking to create this one world government, one world society and one world religion. And this council. And Fanar is about as orthodox as the desk that I'm writing on. It is a disgusting parody of what used to be an Orthodox church. But God will never abandon his people, and that's the most important thing. We race through a lot of things here. I'm sorry about that. But this is very complicated. I even got like the 20% of what I wanted to get to here. But the most important thing is that bishops are not the church. They don't rule anything. And as they fall one by one, it doesn't mean we do. You know, if the president, you know, supports a New World Order, say, it doesn't mean America supports it. God is not irrational. God is not unjust. And God is looking for reasons to save his people, not send them to hell. We don't fall for this papalism, the created grace heresy, the chiliasm and everything else, all the heresies that go into this notion that bishops rule the church in the modern sense of the word. Bishops are usually a pain in the ass. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to The Orthodox Nationalists with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson at RadioArian.com.